Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today. Today is Tuesday, February 24th, and feels like we're sailing through the year already. And our special guest today is Ed Roman. And I'll just tell you a little bit about Ed. Right out of the gate with his freshman release way back in 2000, Special Ed and the Musically Challenged, Ed Roman defined his paragram with inventive, infectious tunes. Guy is definitely really, really unique. And he's got a lot to talk about today. And one thing in particular that we'd love to touch on is back in 2014, Letters from High Latitudes. So I'd really like to talk with Ed about that. So welcome, Ed. How are you?
Catherine, I'm great. I'm just happy to be on the show. It's great to talk with you today.
Oh, it's been a while, right?
It has. And you know what? Your statement is so true off the top of the show. It already seems like the year is just zooming, you know, and March is around the corner. And I'm 5-0, and it's going to be an early spring, folks. It's going to be an early spring. I can feel it in my bones. Start saving your rainwater. Get it ready for your gardens. It's going to be a hot, dry summer.
Because where are you located, Ed?
We're up here in Canada, in Ontario. I'm just north of Toronto by a couple hours in a really rural old farming community. That's my background. You know, aside from music and you know, writing music and playing, my family was also very involved in agriculture. We had a huge Holstein farm. My parents, mom and dad specifically, had also started the first embryo transplant center for cattle in Canada. And they had brought a specific type of beef cattle here that was very lean, and it grew very well. It was a pastured animal. And it was called Blonde Aquitaines. They're all over Canada and the United States now. And they were upgrading the quality of animal just through, not genetics, but my uncle as well and my dad had that innate ability to look at animals and know that crossbreeding should occur in order to, you know, have a wonderful stock of animals from those particular breeds. And breeding and breeders themselves and that concept is really a not necessarily a lost art form, but in today's world with the way that people are sort of doing things, it's very different and alarming in some cases. So even the Holstein aspect, in 1975, my uncle's crossbreeding got to the point where he sold a calf from this particular crossbreed to the Japanese market for $1.8 million. It was on the front cover of Time magazine. It was actually called Super Cow. And that whole thing is a very big... So aside from the livestock, we had a huge cash crop farm. We were growing corn, all kinds of vegetables, potatoes. We all had alarmingly huge gardens. My parents' garden at home was 2 acres. Like, we grew that much food, and our basements were filled with food. We never really had to buy a lot other than, you know, coffee, and we had a local butcher, but that meat came from down the road from other people that were selling their cattle, or if we took our cattle to stock, we had meat, so... It was kind of all part of that.
That's
so great. I'm more like a cross between, you know, Nikola Tesla, a groundhog, and Jimi Hendrix. You know, like I'm very attuned to nature and growing food. I'm also a huge advocate for that.
Mhm. I think that's great. That must have been such an interesting way to grow up. You know,
a beautiful way to grow up because, you know, you could frame it in a Norman Rockwell-esque kind of way by describing it. But what it was really more symbiotically living in our lives with our surroundings. Because we had the animals, we had pets, we had the farm, we were growing food and doing it. It was sort of what you just did. It wasn't like, you know, we had chores, but we didn't think about it that way. It was like, well, we went to the garden to work on the food, pulling weeds or doing whatever we had to do, but it wasn't like a difficulty. But at the same time, we were also, all of us, brothers, sisters, parents, into a multitude of different things. My dad, he was police commissioner for 14 years, and then He ran as municipally in the town of Markham, and he was mayor of Markham for almost 30 years. And then in the early 80s, the liberal people, the constituents in our particular area of York Region, had ousted their leader as well as the Progressive Conservative Party and asked my dad to run as an independent in Ottawa. And they formed a coalition candidate. It was the first ever in Canadian history of federal politics that somebody had done that, and went to Ottawa and won. And in those 4 years that he was there, because my dad's health was declining, this is all somebody that lived with and dealt with multiple sclerosis for almost 20 years while doing all of this. He did more for the town and the riding of York North than a lot of what he called polytricks, which were going on. That's another thing. My dad may have been a politician, but he hated the word. He considered himself a public servant. And it's funny today, you know, Cass, the things that I remember him telling me in his declining health, post-Ottawa, now living back at home again and things like that, they're coming to fruition in many ways, especially when it comes to civil rights and freedoms, the corporate agenda, how it's overriding, you know, the common good of the public in many ways, whether it be pharmacological, has to do with voting, the way we vote, the laws and regulations that are in place now here even in Canada with this new terrorist bill that seems to be being voted on in a second reading right now, which is alarming in the federal government. All of that he saw happening then. This was back in 1984, between 84 and 88. And, you know, I still run into people today in the town of Markham. If I'm there and I'm playing a gig or something and somebody will come up to me, and I may not know them, in some cases I might, but they'll ask me my name and they'll say, "Was your dad Tony?" And I'll say, "Yeah." And they'll say, "You know, your dad was the last honest politician that we had. We wish he was still around today." You know, and I don't boast in a sense that I'm like so proud of him as a person and a father in a sense, but the realism of it is that if he were alive today, he would be prime minister of this country.
Amazing! It's just so amazing to hear this.
So that all part of my background with farming and the living in a very huge household of people. As a young kid, also made me have to kind of have a voice amongst the political banter that would go on at the kitchen table, the continual flow of people that were from the municipality or the farmers union or any of that stuff that my dad was affiliated with. That was always going on. My house was always busy. So I had a bit of a a stage of people to be able to kind of go, "Hey, I'm Ed, listen to this little tune I wrote," right? You know? And that's where I found my love for music, and it sort of tied into the fact that in school I was diagnosed at a young age as a dyslexic, and they told my mom I had ADD, and they wanted to put me on Ritalin. So my mom did something incredibly smart, and I love her for it, and she bought me a guitar. And she spent hours and hours with me as a kid, working with flashcards, helping me to pronounce words correctly, and deal with all of that, as opposed to, "No, we want to put him on a pharmaceutical." And today I'm a huge advocate for people that are dyslexics and people that are dealing with any kind of sort of issue. I'm saying to people, don't ever let anybody tell you it's a disability or a disadvantage, because what I've learned in the 44 years of my life dealing with it myself is that there's nothing different about the way a dyslexic learns. What it is the way we perceive the information and its relevancy and how quickly we try to stuff it into our heads sometimes, and the difficulty of having to read these words. So you're forced to do things 3 and 4 times over, and consequently, a lot of dyslexics develop a photographic-esque kind of memory. And they can use that to their advantage, as opposed to being told, "Well, you've got this problem, you don't fit into a box, you can't read, you look at your spelling, it's atrocious," and all those other things that kind of go with that, you know, you're not fitting in the education system factor. So music for me, inside of that world, helped me get out of that feeling and go, "Hey, look, I can perform, I can sing a tune, I can relate to people at a campfire or a house party or wherever I am." I didn't have that feeling that, like, I wasn't doing well. at something, especially with all those years of your life as a youngster you spend in school. You think, you got a problem. You got a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, no, you don't. You're just thinking differently about the situation.
That's amazing. And the support that you got from your family, especially your mom.
Oh,
and I love
and my
what you said, too.
And grandmother, too. And brothers. I know. And, you know, I still today, every once in a while I'm talking to her, whatever we're talking about, I'll go, you know, Mom, thanks, because I could see, as a teacher, too, for so many years, in the last 10 years of teaching, I've noticed more kids, because I also did therapy at an institute, music therapy with kids that are going through all kinds of stuff, that medicated kids is not a good thing. And when kids
would not a good thing. I totally agree with you.
They're drooling in my class. They're not perceiving anything. You can't seem to get their attention. I took it up with the staff, and they're like, well, they have to. It's part of the regimen of the program, and they need to be that way while they're here because of this, that, and the other thing. And it sort of really bothered me, and I fought it a number of times. But I also had a bunch of kids that were coming to me privately, and I was because I was teaching 50 kids a week here out of the house. And the one of the kids that was coming here, was his mom gave me the whole lowdown. This is wrong, is what's wrong with him, and this is why he's on this, and he's on this at school, and da da da. So when he comes to your class, he might be a little funky, like dopey. So I'm thinking, okay. And over a period of time, there was a couple times he came near the latter half of the year, and I said to him, hey, you know, you've been showing up a little later. Like, because he had to flip-flop his classes with his brother or something. And he wasn't on the pills anymore. And he seemed totally different in the way. And I said, why when you come here to my class do you not have to take your medication, but when you go to school for the day, you're on that stuff? And he just said to me, you make the class interesting, Ed. And this is coming from a 10-year-old. Okay, or 11-year-old.
Wow.
And I thought then, and I, from being a dyslexic myself and knowing how hard it is to fit into those frameworks, that today schools seem to be doing this at a rampant rate, in so much so that they make themselves look good, or even this ungrading thing that's going on now, where we don't want to really, you know, give them an F ever because they don't want to feel bad about themselves, or that's not healthy. As far as learning is concerned, and being a teacher for so long, I know that you need to make mistakes in order to figure out what's right. So by placating these kids, and mentally and physically with this stuff, it's not working. It becomes our job then as teachers and the institution of education to say, how then do we need to approach this in a different way? And from teaching from so long, I got to tell you, nobody learns the same way, the same speed, and I've had to learn a number of times to come to a situation from a different perspective, because it's that tried, trusted A, B, and C method may not always work for that person. And it drives me crazy when I hear this, even coming from students. You know, and I know what it's like. You're there, you're regurgitating information. You know, I bring up stuff to people that, you know, I went to high school with about something in biology, and they're like, I don't remember that. And I guess because my issue with having to remember stuff that way has forced me into that headspace. So when I even talk to kids about that are in that position, we have serious conversations about what that is. And I think the teaching institution is also, you know, there's guidance counselors, there's those kinds of, they themselves yet don't know how to navigate what that is in this day and age, because everything is changing so rapidly as far as, you know, the way things were 50 years ago.
Yes, completely differently. Incredible. Your work is just amazing that you do with young people and opening their eyes to a different way, you know, of learning and growing and getting past, you know, challenges that we all have.
You know, to me, school should be something more like what you have in life, like in your life experience. And maybe it's more for me, I'm going to use a farming metaphor again, but like like kibbutzes or these places where, you know, kids are more living a hands-on environment and seeing things in other ways that help them with the sort of technical aspect of education. So for me, like if I'm out in the garden and I'm working with my nieces and nephews who are older now, but when even when they're younger, and they do it themselves now, and that's what I'm getting at, is that that is also taught. That if education, the education system, for instance, let's say your average public school, from the hour of 9 in the morning to when the kids show up till in the afternoon, especially through the spring, and even in all the states in the United States, or anywhere where they have, you know, a great climate to be able to do this, or even the greenhouse concept, which a lot of old high schools up here still have these big old greenhouses. Some of them aren't running, but some of them are starting to come back online again. So they're doing physical things with their living environment. And what happens is, aside from, okay, I'm planting this, I'm hoeing this, we're planting, weeding, whatever, watching it, watering, fertilizing, you're also activating a completely other side of your mind in a way that's helping it relax. You're allowing it to open itself up to a different thought pattern, because sometimes in those sort of laborious jobs that you're doing, you're crawling on your hands and knees, you're putting stones around your pepper plants so they'll actually gather more heat because peppers like more heat. Your mind is also going, I'm feeling really great about being in the sun. I can feel it on my back. I can hear the birds chirping. All of that kind of stuff is leveling you emotionally. It's getting you out of that technical, environment that we're all living in. And then your mind starts to go, you know, I was thinking about reading that book the other day, and somebody told me this story about stuff, and your mind starts to put together all these little parts of your consciousness that are being filled continually, and you're allowed to creatively think about them. All of a sudden at noon, let's say, till 3:30 or whatever, that mind is now conditioned for those sort of mechanical aspects to education because it's more relaxed. And what it's had is it's had that at its inception period of thinking at the beginning of a day. It's almost like doing Tai Chi in the morning or something, getting your body ready and flowing into that environment. The Buddhist, there's so many cultures around the world that sort of embrace. And farm culture or even grow culture has that in it. Every morning I spend an hour and 40 minutes in my garden, all spring, summer, and fall long. In the evening, same thing. If I have a chance to be out there the course of the day, farting around with my potatoes or doing whatever I'm doing it. But it gives me that, when I have to come in and spend 8 hours on the computer because I'm networking and I'm sending this stuff out and I'm talking to people and I got to get ready for a gig and plan the hotel rooms and rent it, all of that is leveled. It feels like it's so much easier to deal with.
I get that.
So, and I was very funny, we're talking about this now, my friend Michelle Rasky, she was calling me the night, she's running these classes, and she's trying to gear around musicians that are, you know, dealing with these kinds of stresses, and how do you do that when you're on the road? And how do you, you know, get that to feel like it's happening for you then? Because being on the road can be pretty stressful. Do you know what I mean? So it's the same thing. I'm a huge proponent about you. Yeah, that are like, you know, they're eating bad, they're staying up late, driving for hours and hours, you know, it's hard. And not only that, finding good quality food.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep eating at McDonald's for a month while you're on the road. I mean,
could you imagine? Oh my gosh! First, the unhealthy aspect, and then just putting on the weight, and I mean, I couldn't even imagine, you know.
Don't you, just the way your body flushes itself and keeps itself flowing, I think that's even more part of it than anything. I mean, I'm happy when I'm going twice a day, so I know things are right. But if I go to Don Mickles or whatever, and I'm like, I eat something, and I haven't gone there in a long time because of that, my colon's going, What did you do to me?
I kind of never eat that type of food either, yeah. Like once in a blue moon, and then I feel blah.
It's 4 in the morning. You're driving for hours. There's nothing. All of a sudden, Exxon, the Golden Arches. Uh-oh. you know, what's Exxon got? Right. Jimmy Dean stuff and, you know, other things like that in the freezer. And I can't even do, and I need something warm because I want to stay up. And, the next day you regret it.
Oh, you do. I totally agree, you know. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Gosh, I could talk to you all day long about this. This is super interesting. We need to do a show just about this subject, Ed.
I'm in. Anytime you want to talk, ready to talk. I'm in. This is it. You know, like,
awesome.
A lot of people I've been doing radio with and blog talk radio, shows like yours, other people's shows, is that they're wonderful to be able to talk about real things.
Yes.
In people's lives.
Real
we
life.
Are so sugar-coated by the mm-hmm. real big media, and they're not even real. It's like crack TV or crack radio in some cases, and it's very biased in some cases. This allows you to have those open forms, to have all of that occurring without the junk. It's real people talking
Absolutely.
About real stuff. You know, all the time. So if you want to talk about stuff, I'm happy to do it.
I'd love to set up a show just for that, that you and I can talk about that. Because as we were talking, I had just a zillion questions in my head, you know. But we'll definitely do that. And we have about, 5 minutes left. So I wanted to talk with you about what your plans are for 2015. It's been a long time since we caught up.
Yeah, Letters from High Latitudes is doing incredibly well, but won the award in Kentucky this past year as Best Contemporary Artist of the Year by the IMEA. Just released the new video for I Found God, which is getting a lot of hits and plays, which is wonderful. A lot of people seem to really relate to the subject matter in that, which is really the earth is our God and what we, you know, we're standing on it. It's right beneath your shoes, you know, the whole time. That record has been doing, I've gotten mossy, Catherine. I've been writing a lot, and I'm excited to say that I'm going to start recording another project in the spring of 2015 when the weather gets nice. I'm planting the seeds again in the spring for something beautiful. And then these stints that I've been making into the U.S., trying to set up some work. We're getting down to Austin March for the Red Gorilla Music Fest in Austin, and then we're back here in Toronto for a benefit that we're doing. Then back down again in Cape May, in New Jersey, for the Cape May Music Festival. I'm just excited to be working and meeting people, talking to people, and making music be something more than just an ego-driven sex trip.
Yes, totally.
You know,
that's
we like sex.
Great.
People like sex.
It's a busy year.
Busy year. But I want to do this show. I'd be happy to come on, and we should do a whole forum on food and agriculture and education. I think that would be a wonderful idea.
I would absolutely love that.
Okay, let's do it.
You know what? That would be great. We'll set that up, and you know, let me know what your schedule is for the next month or 2 months or whenever you're free, and we'll definitely set that up because I personally feel that it's a super interesting topic, a lot of information, and people just are not aware, you know
right.
what I mean? I just had a zillion questions going through my head, and I'll jot them down, but I would love to do a show just specifically about that. I think that would be a lot of fun. You just fill in so much cool information and life experiences, you know.
I know, that's the whole deal. Is talking means life experience and learning from each other, good and bad, right? That's
Absolutely.
The way I look at it anyway. Yeah.
that's great. Yes, I would love to do that, and we'll set it up. So everyone just stay tuned to me and Ed on social media, and we'll send you guys some information as to when we can do that. And, Ed, thank you so much. I'm excited for you. I really am excited for you.
Well, we're doing it together,
You're
my
welcome.
Friend. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you so much. And we'll be in touch and we'll set something up.
Anytime, Catherine. My pleasure. You have a good one.
You too, Ed. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. I've always found Ed Roman to be a super fascinating man with just so much cool experience and just life, and we definitely will set up a show based on what we talked about today. I know that you guys find that interesting. Like I mentioned, I have a zillion questions going through my head for Ed, so I think that'll be a lot of fun. And we'll try to set that up pretty soon, probably in the next few weeks. It's already, like we talked about, almost March 1st, so stay tuned. Again, Ed, thank you. Michael, thank you. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye for now.